Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, local health officials expect a surge in coronavirus cases. In the coming weeks, they briefed Boulder City Council members last night and heard a report on possible economic fallout to the city. We'll have more coming up after headlines. Then today is the first of the month and rent is due. And for many Coloradoans, it's just not going to be possible to pay today. We'll hear from Kurt Fernharber, who is the Housing and Human Services Director for the City of Boulder, for what relief is out there. Then we'll get reaction from the announcement yesterday that the clean car standards were being rolled back at a federal level. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You, followed by Naturally with Brigitte Mars. Then at 8:35, Joe Juhas is your guest for Good Old CU, taking a look this morning at the impact of COVID-19 on higher level education. At 9 o'clock, Claudia Craig is in to take a comprehensive look at some of the new medicine that is being touted as a possible cure for coronavirus. And her guest urges caution when it comes to rigorous testing of this. It's 5 minutes past 9 o'clock, or excuse me, 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, and we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Colorado's hospitals are not currently anywhere near capacity, according to the Hospital Association. Nevertheless, officials are finalizing guidelines to help doctors treating coronavirus patients make very difficult decisions about how to prioritize care. Should the system become overwhelmed, doctors would have to choose who gets scarce equipment and staffing. The governor's emergency epidemic response team has been working on how to put protocols in place. The guidelines note that resources would have to be diverted from those with a lower likelihood of benefit. Disability advocacy groups have objected to plans in other states, such as Alabama, that say people with severe mental retardation, advanced dementia, or severe brain injuries may be poor candidates for ventilator support. Dr. Darlene Tatey of the University of Colorado Hospital in Aurora and a member of the response team said that Colorado's approach is not to look at categories of people, but at an individual's overall health and their likelihood to survive the virus. The team is expected to have its report to the governor within 10 days. Yesterday, Colorado officials said that 17 people in the state had died due to the virus from Monday until Tuesday. That is the biggest single-day increase yet. The Colorado Sun reports that the total number of deaths is 70, one more than the official total because a man in Elbert County was reported to have died earlier with links to the virus. The total number of those infected increased to more than 2,900, with 550 confirmed in the hospital. In Boulder County, a second resident has died after testing positive. The county has 115 confirmed cases. The state's incident commander for the COVID-19 response said yesterday that the continued lack of critical testing supplies has stymied hopes that the number of tests would increase substantially. Scott Bookman with the Department of Health said that the limitation on testing people is based on the ability of those doing the testing to get personal protective equipment and to conduct the necessary swabbing. Yesterday, the state reported that there were an additional 1,485 tests, but that number is less than what was reported on each of March 26th, 27th, and 28th. Nine News reports that tracking the spread of the virus is quite difficult if only the very sick are getting tests. Last night, the Denver City Council passed three bills to help residents get through the pandemic. A release from the city says that $13.5 million will be allocated, with $10 million going to fund for services and supplies like PPE, overtime pay for personnel, and the purchase of beds and medical equipment. $3.5 million will go to help businesses support their employees. A third bill will allow the city to donate surplus computers to a group called PCs for People to be used by low-income families. The mayor of Longmont is facing criticism after he slammed the governor's stay-at-home policy during a virtual city council meeting. During the meeting, Mayor Brian Bagley said that he wants somebody to come over and spit in his mouth so he can go to the hospital now because he's not going to die. Denver 7 reports that Mayor Bagley seemed to focus on the economic impact of the stay-at-home order and questioned the decisions of state and local leaders. Bagley said, quote, "Screw the fact that I mayor and screw the fact that I'm on the city council. My background is economics. I am telling you, we are not going to have a recession. We are not going to have a depression. We are facing the worst economic disaster in the history of the world. And if no one is left after with jobs, we are going to face health consequences much more than a disease that's going to kill 0.05 of 1% of us, unquote. The mayor said that he is not choosing the economy over the virus, but that people die all the time, and that a political leader, presumably the governor, has suspended the constitutional right to assemble. Polly Christensen, a council member, shook her head during the virtual meeting and later said that everybody is frustrated, but we are grown-ups and need to listen to medical experts. Yesterday, Governor Jared Polis sent a letter urging the federal government to automatically extend work authorizations for deferred action childhood arrival recipients set to expire this year. The policy, started in the Obama administration, allows eligible immigrants who came to the U.S. illegally as children to receive a renewable 2-year authorization to work and study. In his letter to the Department of Homeland Security, Polis said that extension of the DACA would provide some needed stability to the state's businesses and residents who benefit from the program. About 900 workers at the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley did not go to work Monday as a handful of cases of COVID-19 were confirmed among employees. Union officials learned about the mass call-offs yesterday and told the Denver Post they don't think it's a concerted protest, but that people are afraid or maybe sick. The union represents about 3,000 of people at the meatpacking plant. Employees there speak 27 different languages. In the weather today, it will be mostly sunny with a high near 67, and after 5 p.m. there's a chance of showers. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with snow showers likely possible, mixed with rain afternoon, with the high falling to about 33. Right now, it's about 40 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. We are experiencing some issues right now with our FM transmitter. We do apologize to listeners and we do urge people to listen online at kgnu.org. Well, Boulder City Council received the latest update last night on how the coronavirus is currently affecting the local community and what impact could be felt in the future. KGNU's Ros Brown has more.
Experts are warning that across the nation, the first 2 weeks of April could be grim when it comes to the number of deaths from COVID-19. That has local health officials doing everything they can while bracing for the worst. Boulder County Public Health Executive Director Jeff Syak.
One of the things that's important to think about here is that the orders went in place, but there's typically a delay from the time that those orders went in place due to exposure and the onset of symptoms, and then another delay to the onset of an ICU admission, and that can be up to 2 weeks. So we know that we expect to see more people coming in over these next 2 weeks. It has been a pattern that we watched across the United States. So we don't want people to give up hope and think that the orders that we're putting in place are not being effective.
Syak says most of the early cases of coronavirus in Boulder County were related to travel, which makes enhanced testing and increased monitoring critical. He added that hospital capacity, an adequate workforce, and necessary equipment are also a concern.
One person who is positive with COVID can infect 3 people. Those 3 people in turn can then affect 9 people. Those 9 people in turn can then affect 27 people, and so on and so forth. So the reason that these orders are so critically important is we want to be able to prevent the spread of that disease by having that spread multiply so quickly once it gets into the population.
As of Tuesday, 2 Boulder County residents have died from the virus, while another 115 have tested positive. Dr. Robert Vissers with the Boulder Hospital told City Council preliminary data from a small sample this week showed that Colorado's order to stay at home seems to be flattening the curve, which would mean fewer people will need to seek treatment for the disease. He added there's no shortage of beds there right now. At the same time, he acknowledged that a new study shows the state could run out of hospital beds in mid-April when the virus is expected to peak.
We are still working under the assumption that we will need 4 to 5 times the critical care beds. We've developed a capacity plan and a model or contingency plan that allows us to increase our critical care beds and ventilated patients to that 4 to 5-fold number. And those would be the patients that we really need to take care of and nobody else can take care of. We're now moving into a way that we can manage the surge because we can't do that and have 4 to 5 times inpatient beds. But if we can move the patients out more quickly and keep patients from coming into hospital, then we can manage those acutely ill critical care patients at that 5-to-fold increase.
As far as the economic outlook for Boulder, the city's executive budget officer, Katie Dowling, reminded council members Boulder's economy was largely spared from the Great Recession starting in 2008, but things look significantly different this time, especially with sales tax revenues accounting for about 50% of the city's budget.
Boulder's primary businesses are in small retail shops, restaurants, and bars, all of which have been forced to partially close or fully close. And we don't have a community where we have a big box stores that may be seeing increase in traffic. Moreover, the loss of 30,000 students who are traditionally in town until May and the loss of 50 to 60,000 in commuters will compound the effects of COVID-related shutdowns. And we project further deflate our sales tax revenue.
Meanwhile, Housing and Human Services Director Kurt Fernhaber urged renters and landlords to work together to keep those without jobs from being evicted.
As this is a public forum, I would urge everyone in the supply chain of housing to do what they can. If they are a renter, I would encourage them to pay their rent and do everything possible to pay their rent. If they're a property owner or a landlord, I would encourage them to work with their tenants and reduce the rent as much as needed based on the needs of the tenants.
For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Well, to further look at what's happening with housing, today is rent day for many people, and for so many Coloradoans, it's just not going to be possible to pay their rent because they've lost their jobs or they have been furloughed. Yesterday, we brought you coverage of a rent strike movement that's brewing here in Colorado. I spoke with Kurt Fernhaber, who we just heard from in that report. He's the Housing and Human Services Director for the City of Boulder, on the very real reality for so many people here that they can't pay rent today.
As Housing and Human Services, we've been reaching out to tenants, to landlords, to the owners of affordable housing, as well as reaching out to both federal and state legislatures to understand which, you know, what funding will be available, and coordinating with housing authorities to receive federal funding to support individuals. But we think we're really at the beginning of what is really going to be a huge challenge for our community, for individuals at various income levels to pay for their rent.
Some of the advice that has been given out is for tenants to contact landlords if they're in a private landlord situation, rental situation. You know, what are you hearing from landlords in terms of their capacity to be flexible on this?
So the Boulder Realtors Association has reached out to all the private landlords, which most are members of, and really asked private landlords to work on an individual basis with their tenants to come up with solutions that meet the needs of their tenants and, you know, either work out payment plans or reduce rent or skipping a month's rent or whatever works for that particular individual in the particular circumstances that they're in. And I think that it's going to take the effort of everyone in the housing supply chain to get us through this. It's going to take the landlords to bend over backwards to help their tenants. It's going to take the tenants to do everything they can to pay their rent. Those who are employed are going to have to pay their rent. And I think everyone is going to have to do what they can to help us as a community get through this.
There has been talk about a rent strike, and certainly people I've spoken to say that even if they didn't want to be rent strikers, that might be the situation they're in because they literally do not have enough money to cover rent. I mean, what would the impact be of that if people just en masse don't pay rent on April 1st?
Yeah, so I think that would be a huge problem and everything would start to crumble at that point. For example, our housing authority has in the city of Boulder has about 1,400 affordable housing rental units. They've been working with their tenants to understand what their needs are. At this point, it's a relatively low number of individuals as far as a percentage that are going to have trouble making their April rent. We'll have to, you know, things will change when we get into May. But if there was an outright, if everyone decided not to pay their rents, it would be a loss of about $1.7 million dollars per month for our housing authority. And probably within a month and a half to 2 months, our housing authority would be in a financial situation that they wouldn't be able to make any of their payments on their properties. That's a situation that we don't want to get in.
So is there a relief in sight, given that, you know, people are still in many cases waiting for unemployment checks or money from the federal relief program? I mean, what do you envision happening in the next week or two?
Yeah, as I said, I think landlords and housing authorities and anyone who owns rental property is going to have to take that into consideration. I mean, if someone lost their job 2 weeks ago, and they can only make partial rents, landlords are going to have to work with individuals until that federal assistance comes through. And I think it's to the benefit of the landlords as well, because people aren't going to be, if you can't evict someone, but even if you could, there's not another individual per se that's going to take their place. So I think it benefits the landlords as well. To come up with solutions for their tenants.
If somebody is listening right now and they are in, say, a private rental housing situation and they are experiencing difficulty and they maybe have never interacted with housing services, at a city level, I mean, what's your advice? Is there a hotline? Is there any resource available for people who are just in a panic right now?
Sure. So for people who are in the city of Boulder and they're unable to make either their full rent or a portion of their rent as a result of their circumstances here, they would want to contact Emergency Family Assistance Association, EFA. EFA is a partner within our community that really assists with rent as well as other needs. And the city of Boulder supports EFA financially as well as they get, support throughout the throughout the community. But EFA is sort of the clearinghouse for that individual support, which they would get locally versus any funds that would come from the federal government.
Do you think that this is really going to impact housing long term? Because the long term repercussions economically for people, will be quite extensive.
Yeah, I don't think this is a 1 or 2 month problem that's, even if COVID is solved in a couple of months in our community, it's going to take much longer than 2 months to recover from this. For many individuals, they're going to be using their savings to cover things. They may not instantly go back to work again. It's going to take a while for our local economy to recover. And I think that we really need to approach this as a long-term challenge for our community. And it's not something we're going to solve in a couple of months. So we need to start having discussions around what those approaches are over the next several months or a year or more.
That's Kurt Fernhaber, who is the Housing and Human Services Director for the City of Boulder. We have been experiencing some intermittent outages with our FM signal. We do apologise to listeners. You can listen to the Morning Magazine in its entirety online at news.kgnu.org. And in fact, you can subscribe to a podcast of it. So your podcast app will update you with the new episode every single day. If you'd like to listen again or listen at a different time, just search for KGNU wherever you get your podcasts. Well, on Tuesday, the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration finalised a rule that would rewrite federal clean car standards. The clean car standards were first established a decade ago, and they were projected to double the fuel economy of cars and also to cut global warming pollution in half for cars sold in 2025. But now these standards have been significantly weakened, and advocates for the environment say it could result in more than 1.5 billion additional metric tons of global warming pollution in our atmosphere by 2040. Local environmental organisations are expressing frustration with these rollbacks. I spoke with Ian Thomas Tafoya. He's with the advocacy group Green Latinos. He's based in Denver. Ian is also one of the hosts of KGNU's Metro.
Not only had we worked so hard here to pass it in Colorado, we believe that states have the right to improve the air quality for people here, but we represent many of the people who live directly adjacent to these highways. Before I worked for Green Latinos, I started my advocacy in environmental justice with the Colorado Latino Forum, which I am still the chair. And we know that with the I-70 expansion, we learned intimate details about small particulate matter and how it really impacts. And in a time with COVID, cardiovascular health couldn't be more important. And to hear this rollback is just really disappointing. On top of that, partnered with Environmental Protection Agency saying they were no longer going to be regulating these polluters during this crisis. And the real slap in the face to my community was to release it on Cesar Chavez Day, a day in which my community looks to as an example of how organizing can really make an impact.
Well, let's dig into some of that a little bit more, and how your community, you know, people of colour are most impacted by the type of environmental degradation that we're seeing from motor vehicles, from air pollution, and particularly in and around the Denver metro area. Why is this rollback of clean air standards so impactful for those communities? As we said, you know, link that to what's happening right now with the I-70 expansion.
Well, I think what it says is we're... I want to make it clear, Hickenlooper and both Polis now, who have not stopped this project, widening highways only puts more pollution and higher concentrations onto the community surrounding them. And as I said, Latinos are the ones that live so close to these areas. But moreover, what they're saying with this is, not only with the EPA not enforcing the environmental protections, they're saying you don't deserve protection now, and by removing car standards, you're saying you don't deserve protection in the future. So it's now and then. It's like saying, too bad, you're not going to get any help or any respite for your lungs, and that's just unacceptable.
Well, now, these are federal standards. Is there anything that states can do to protect air quality, given that this particular area has been out of compliance with air quality standards for so long, and the state actually is obliged now to address that in some way? Can the state step into this breach in any way?
Well, the state had stepped into this breach originally by agreeing to go to stronger standards. And so this rollback is saying that us and 14 states in D.C. will no longer have that ability. And as far as trying to deal, especially with the Front Range air quality issues, I've been directly part of the Regional Air Quality Council conversations with their SIP plan. And it's pretty clear to me the state is not on track. You know, we just got downgraded to Sirius. I don't see any reason why, based on the average metrics, we probably won't be downgraded to severe. Especially under Hickenlooper's administration, it seemed like they weren't willing to take on some of the largest polluters that we know, which is the methane that's being released. And there are even new studies that were released last year that perhaps these methane leaks actually drive even more ozone from the VOCs. So unless we can rope in the oil and gas industry, unless we can rope in Suncor, which I've been in the news a lot as an advocate for trying to rein in the pollution from Suncor, we're really not going to get there. And moreover, we have a goal, 1261, which sets us on climate targets. Well, when we reduce climate emissions, we get co-benefits for air quality, for sulfur dioxide and these other VOCs. And so we know, in a recent release from NRDC and Conservation Club Colorado and more than 40 other groups are coming together to say, Polis, none of these hard-fought wins, 181, 1261, are going to get anywhere close to the IPCC goals.
You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. That was Ian Thomas Tafoya, who is with the advocacy group Green Latinos, giving his reaction to yesterday's rollback of clean car standards. It's 8:28. It's time now for Make Them Hear You.
Make Them Hear You. This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The recent $2 trillion relief package signed into law includes $400 million for grants to state and local election systems. But according to an estimate by the nonprofit Brennan Center for Justice, about $2 billion is needed for a massive effort to move states toward voting by mail rather than in person in order to lessen the public health risk of the coronavirus pandemic and preserve voter participation. States have been moving toward mail-in balloting, but 17 states still limit absentee balloting to those with an excuse. Senators Amy Klobuchar and Ron Wyden said their new bill, the Natural Disaster and Emergency Ballot Act of 2020, will help election officials meet this pandemic head-on. Wyden and Klobuchar also want states to allow every voter to vote by mail. Specifically, the bill would ensure that voters in all 20 states have 20 days of early in-person voting and no-excuse absentee vote by mail. Guarantee that all voter registration applications submitted by mail or online up to and until 21 days prior to Election Day are deemed valid. Require states and jurisdictions to establish a publicly available contingency plan to enable eligible Americans to vote in the case of an emergency. Provide all voters with the option of online requests for absentee ballots. Guarantee the counting of absentee ballots postmarked or signed before the close of polls on Election Day. Ensure states provide self-sealing envelopes with prepaid postage. Require states to offer their downloadable and printable absentee ballots currently made available to military and overseas voters. Direct all states that do not already use ballot tracking systems to use envelopes with an intelligent mail barcode. Charge the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency to create a domestic ballot update service for election officials. Ensure states implement a specified signature curing procedure for voters, provide additional accommodations for Native American voters, and authorize funds necessary to reimburse states for the cost of implementing the act. That's a lot, and requirements go into effect for the 2020 general election and thereafter, so Republicans are likely to oppose this as a violation of the state's right to run their own elections. Nancy Pelosi of California said House Democrats will be taking the lead on the next round of coronavirus relief legislation. Klobuchar told reporters she's enlisted support from state election officials, including Republicans, to make the case that voting problems are not being exaggerated by Democrats seeking to federalize elections. During the recent negotiations, Republican secretaries of state got in touch with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senator Roy Blunt, whose committee oversees election laws, to make the case that money is needed yesterday to help them move more voting by mail. Blunt said in an email he supported new grants to help ensure state and local election officials have the resources they need to address the unique challenges they face as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. If you have thoughts on the Natural Disaster and Emergency Ballot Act of 2020, you can contact your senators and congressperson. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.